Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Daniel chapter 10. After the struggle of Daniel 9, 10 is going to be really easy because really 10 through 12 forms a literary unit. 10 prepares for the message of 11, and 12 is the epilogue to that message. So today the angel is just going to set the stage in chapter 10 for what's coming in the detailed and lengthy chapter 11. So let's go to chapter 10. In the third year of Cyrus, and that's surprising to me because back in chapter 1, verse 21, it says that Daniel served until the first year of Cyrus. And this is 2 years after that. Now we've got to remember that 1:21 is not so much a specific date as saying from the empires of Nebuchadnezzar and Neo-Babylon to the empire of Persia and Cyrus, Daniel served. And that's what it's kind of saying there. What surprised me about the third year of Cyrus is that Daniel didn't go home with the exiles. He stayed in Babylon. Isn't that something? Now, he's an older man. I guess he's between 70 and 80, something like that, 70 and 90, somewhere in there, depending on how old he was when he was taken captive. But he's an elderly man, but you'd have thought of all the people, he'd have gone home, wouldn't you? Well, he didn't. Now, it says the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. That's surprising because we usually think of him as king of Babylon and date it from when he took over the Babylon Empire and issued his decree about 538. So if it's 538, the third year would be 539 when he took over the city. It'd be about 537, 536. But with king of Persia, now he became king of Media much earlier than he became king of Babylon. So why this is here and exactly what date it means, we're not real certain. Okay? A message was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar, which means may blank, not included in the name, protect his life. Okay? Remember, Belshazzar means may Nebo protect the king. But here it's Belteshazzar. And the message was true and one of great conflict. Now, what's going to be surprising is in chapter 10, the curtain is pulled back on history in a way we very, very seldom see it. Behind the events that happened on earth, not only is there the intercessory prayer of the saints, which we're going to see in Daniel's life, but there is the demonic opposition to God that does have an effect. And that's what the straight struggle is going to be talked about. But he understood the message, and he had understanding of the vision. Well, that's surprising, because back in chapter 7, 15 and 28, and chapter 8, 27, he did not understand it. Now, that's why a lot of us believe that verse 1 is really a summary of the entire chapter of 10. Because it's going to say he fasted 3 weeks in verse 2. Now, some say he fasted before the vision came. But it seems to me, when I read this, that another vision came and Daniel did not understand it. It was a vision of conflict and struggle in the spiritual realm. And then Daniel wanted to know what it meant, so he began to fast and pray for God to give him understanding, which seems to be what it's talking about here. In verse 3 and verse 4. So, I think he fasted 3 weeks to get the interpretation. And I think verse 1 is a summary, and then verse 2 begins the specific details. It seemed to fit that to me anyway. Now, in those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning. Now, the sense of mourning here is the ideal of fasting. Sometimes you fast for sin. Sometimes you fast for problems in your life, whatever. But Daniel had been fasting for 3 weeks. Now, this is not a complete fast. You'd die. So obviously it says he hadn't tasted any tasty food, meat, or wine. So apparently he's on a water and vegetable diet. Much like the diet that he started the book off with, remember? What that tells me is that Daniel didn't stay on that vegetable diet that's mentioned in chapter 1. He kind of liked that wine and food. He's 90 years old, somewhere between 90 and wherever he was when he was taken captive. He started eating the king's food and liked it. So he went on a fast and he got off that. Now, let's see. Okay, verse 4. And on the 24th day, you know, that is an unusual thing. I don't know what's so significant about the 24th day, but in the book of Haggai and Zechariah, who deal with post-exilic times, the 24th day becomes a very important day. It's mentioned in Haggai 1:15, 2:10, 2:18, 2:20, and Zechariah 1:7. So we don't know what the significance was, but there obviously was some kind of religious significance to the 24th day. Now, this happens to be the first month. Now, what's surprising about that is Daniel fasted through Passover, which occurred in the 14th, connected with the 7 days of unleavened bread, and he fasted through the Feast of Tabernacles, which began on the 15th and went for a week. So he fasted right through both of these feast days. It shows how serious he was, how emotionally distraught with what he had seen. Then it says, I was on the bank of the great river, the Tigris. Now, usually in the Old Testament, the term great river means the Euphrates. The fact that it's here, the Tigris, has been some amount of controversy among commentators. Now, the Tigris is the tributary that's north of the Euphrates, if you look on a map, and the city of Nineveh was located on the Tigris. Babylon is located on the Euphrates. Now, it seems to me that Daniel had been assigned some governmental assignment, some governmental task, and he was simply there in this area of the empire when the vision came. Either that, or he was transported here by the vision. Now, which it is, I'm not sure. And I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold, the gold of... Now, I have Euphaz, and I'll come back to that. Look in verse 6 what it says about him. Why, this is one fancy angel, I want to tell you. He is dressed marvelously. Matter of fact, the descriptions used of this man in verse 6 are used in the letters to the seven churches in Revelation chapter 1, 2, and 3 to describe Jesus himself. Many have said it's the incarnate Christ then. No, because then in verse 13, an evil angel is going to hold this guy up for 21 days. And I don't think any evil angel could hold the Messiah for 3 weeks. So I just can't buy it's the Messiah. But let's look at this guy. He's dressed in linen. That's usually the white linen was the covering of the priest. And so we learn from Luke 24:4 that those angels were dressed in brightness. We learn from Acts 1:10 they were dressed in white. So apparently angels came dressed in white, bright linen. And that's the idea here. Now the belt or the girdle of gold. Now mine has the gold of Euphaz. Some have a different name. You might want to see Jeremiah 10:9 where this place name seems to be mentioned. But really, it can mean fine gold, refined gold. And that's how it's used in 1 Kings 10:18, and that may be a better understanding of the Hebrew word. Now, his body was like beryl. I think the New International Version has chrysolite. But we don't know about these ancient jewels and colors. They change not only from country to country, but from period to period within the same country. So most folks think it's a gold or yellowish. The guy had a great suntan. That's the idea, if you let me put it that way. He had the appearance of lightning. Woo! His eyes were like flaming torches, used of Jesus, Revelation 1:14. His arms and feet were like polished bronze. The sound of his words like the sound of a tumult. Now, some say it's the sound of waters or a sound of a crowd or a sound of animals. It means roaring. It's just really strange, powerful sound. And exactly what it is, we're not sure. Some have said, well, it must be Jesus. Some have said, no, it's Gabriel. Some said, no, it's another created angel. We don't know who it is. It's obviously a very high angel. Not an archangel, but a high angel. Now, I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, while the men who were with me did not see the vision. Nevertheless, a great dread fell on them, and they ran away to hide themselves. But it's a lot like Acts 9:7 and Acts 22:9, where Paul describes his vision on the road to Damascus. The one with him saw the light, and they heard the sound but didn't understand the voice. Well, now, these guys apparently didn't see it, but they recognized that something in the spiritual realm was happening, and they become very afraid, and they ran out of the room, left Daniel by himself. Now, so I was left alone. I saw this great vision, yet no strength was left in me, for my natural color turned to a deadly pale, and I retained no strength. These visions wiped Daniel out. Look at chapter 7, verse 28. Look at chapter 8, verse 27. Yet we'll see Revelation 1:17. The same thing happened to John on the Isle of Patmos. These visions were so powerful that it almost took the human life of the one viewing them. Many times an angel had to touch the prophet Zechariah in his 8 visions, chapter 1 through 6, because he was overcome with these visions. And so is Daniel, just sick to his stomach, about to die, friends, from this. Now, and I heard the sound of his words, and as soon as I heard the sound of his words, I fell on my face in deep sleep. Now, what about this deep sleep? Well, sleep is often identify with some of these strong supernatural revelations. You might well see Daniel 8:18. You might well see Jeremiah 31:26 and Zechariah 4:1, where sleep is connected with these revelations. Then behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. Now, apparently in the Hebrew, it's the idea of touching and rising. So the angel touched him. Remember, the angels apparently impart strength. The angel helped Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Angel helped Elijah in 1 Kings 19, 5 through 7. We have something of this in verses 16 and 18, this very chapter. Daniel gets sick again. The angel has to touch him so he can keep on. And so, boy, it was really a tough job. Daniel wanted to know, but it was spiritually and physically draining on him. And the angel said to me, "Oh, Daniel, man of high esteem." That's an honorific title. If we could put it in New Testament idioms, it might be good and faithful servant. "Understands the word I'm about to tell you and stand upright." Daniel was still slooping down. Boy, he was about to go back on the floor. "For I have been sent to you." And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. "Then he said to me, 'Do not be afraid, Daniel. From the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to your words.'" Now look at this. God heard Daniel's prayer for understanding and dispatched this angel. But it's taken this angel 21 days to get to Daniel. Now remember earlier in Daniel I talked about where it said and Gabriel flew to Daniel, and the Hebrew could be interpreted that he was very tired. Gabriel was from flying so far. Well, maybe heaven's a long way from here. And angels, it's tiring for the angels to get here. I don't know. There's a 21-day gap. The next verse says the reason for the 21-day gap is an angel of the nation of Persia withstood this messenger angel for God for 21 days. My goodness. Do you mean tell me that there is something in the spiritual conflict that can still thwart God's will for a long time? Now think what I'm saying. Sometimes answered prayer or unanswered prayer, as we see it in the sense of not immediately happening, that we can tell. Maybe it's not just God's wills involved, but maybe God has limited himself not only to the prayers of his children, but to the spiritual warfare that is ongoing in the angelic realm. Friend, this angelic warfare is a very interesting thing. The fall of man is preceded by the fall of the angels. We see something of this warfare in the New Testament passages that deal with principalities and powers, that deal with spiritual warfare like Ephesians 6, 10 and following. There is a supernatural struggle going on with men's lives and history in the balance. Now, I know that's astonishing, and it's not mentioned many places at all in the Bible. It is here. Now, notice what's happening. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia. Now, this seems to be an angel, because we're going to mention Michael, and he's going to be the angel for the people of God. Now, because the messenger angel from God, this very powerful, strong, beautifully dressed messenger, is opposed by another angel, obviously the angel of Persia must be a demonic angel. Now, does that mean that there are angels for every nation? Well, there are two places I want to show you this. If you have a copy of the Septuagint in English, if you'll turn to Deuteronomy 32:9, you'll see what it talks about there. It says that the nations were divided among the number of the angels. Now, the rabbis use Deuteronomy 29:26 as a proof text for angels behind human government. And some folks like to use Isaiah 24:21 as a background to this text. Now, all along, we have been asserting that in the book of Daniel, these empires are a representation of world government apart from God and of them oppressing God's people. Now, that seems to be true because behind world governments, behind the news headlines, there is a spiritual war raging. And the governments of the world are controlled by supernatural demonic forces. Yes, America too. And something of the struggle between God and the evil one has dropped down into human history. Now, that's heavy. I know that's heavy, but that seems to be exactly what this is saying. that God will overcome human government. Isn't the book of the Revelation, which uses the Whore of Babylon as both economic system and religious system, as human governments opposing God's people, isn't that the same truth put in a little different form in a different period? I think it is. So here we have the angel of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me, wow, for 21 days. My goodness. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, now he's called an archangel in the New Testament. You might want to see Jude 9 and Revelation 12, 7, where he's mentioned. Now, I don't want to say he's the prince of the Jews only. I want to say he is the angel for the people of God. You mean there's a national angel as well as individual angels for believers? I think so. Now, I don't understand how individual angels can be helpful when we have the indwelling Holy Spirit, but I know that Jesus was God incarnate and angels ministered to him. So, here comes Daniel, the archangel, the people of God, to help this powerful messenger angel get through this demonic conflict. My goodness. Now, of course, the word Michael means who is like God, okay? And, boy, I tell you, it's really amazed me to show what's happening behind human history and happening in our prayer lives. Boy, we've got to hang in there because we don't know all that's involved. Now, I have come to give you understanding of what will happen to your people in the latter days. That's what Daniel's been asking. And that's what Daniel's so upset about. Daniel said, remember back in chapter 9, the 70 years are almost up. God, what are you going to do? And God said, well, Daniel, I'm going to restore you. But Daniel, I want you to know that your people are going to be taken again and hurt again and destroyed again. The temple's going to fall again. And Daniel says, oh, no, my goodness. He was hoping for a restoration. What God showed him is there will be a restoration for a period, but there's going to be another fall and another restoration. How many, we don't know. And so that's what Daniel's concerned about, the latter days, when these things will occur. For the vision pertains to the days of the future, and I would say the days of the Messiah. And when he had spoken to them according to these words, I turned my face toward the ground and became speechless. He's still wiped out physically over this as well as emotionally. And behold, one who resembled a human being was touching my lips. Now, is that the angel dressed in the bright white with the gold belt? Is it Michael? Is it another angel? We just don't know. And there's supernatural people all over this chapter, I want to tell you. Touching my lips, much like what happened to Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 6. And yet here, it's for strengthening, not cleansing. Then I opened my mouth and spoke and said to him who was standing over me, O my Lord, as a result of the vision, anguish has come upon me, and I have retained no strength. He's sick as a dog over this. For how can such a servant as my Lord talk with such as you know, my Lord, as for me, there remains just now no strength in me, nor any breath left in me. Daniel said, I'm about to die. And the angel's going to touch him again. Then this one with human appearance touched me again and strengthened me. Remember how the angel strengthened Jesus? How the angel strengthened Elijah in 1 Kings 19? How the angels ministered to him, you know? So, I don't understand all that, but obviously it's a truth. You might read Matthew 18 for that we have angels with us. Then they said, O man of high esteem, do not be afraid. Peace be with you. Take courage and be courageous. Now, as soon as he spoke to me, I received strength, and I said, may the Lord speak. Now, notice the word Lord here is not the all capitals title for God. It's just owner, master, or Lord, which is a title of respect that Daniel's using for these angelic speakers. All right? Now, verse 20. And he said, do you understand why I came to you? Now, he's asking Daniel, and Daniel says, I don't understand all this. These angels quite often use questions as a way to bring man to say, no, help me. No, I don't understand. No, speak to me, okay? Then he said, do you not understand why I came to you? But I shall now return to fight against the prince of Persia, so I'm going forth, and behold, the prince of Greece is about to come. This angel says, look, Daniel, you got to get your strength back, fella, because I got to go back out to this fight. I can't stay with you long. God sent me to tell you this, but there's trouble out there, you know, right here in Denver City. And I've got to go out there and fight again. So you've got to get your strength so I can tell you what this means so I can get back out there. Isn't that amazing that behind world history is this kind of spiritual struggle that apparently is ongoing between the angels of God and the angels of the evil one? Isn't that astonishing? Friends, I don't believe anything just happens to God's children. I believe God's in control. But this tells me there's another factor, which means sometimes the time element is hindered by evil forces. You ever thought about that? Now, this prince of Persia is the demonic angel in charge of the nation of Persia. And the prince, it's Javan, J-A-V-A-N. Now, this is the name, ancient name for Greece. And chapter 11 is going to be detailed on the period of Greek history following Alexander the Great's death. Now, some have said that this shows that the prophet wrote in the Maccabean period. Well, if you're nervous about predictive prophecy, you're going to get that. But I want to tell you that there are other very specific prophecies in the Bible. Jeremiah 50 and 51, Zechariah 9, 1 through 8 are very specific prophecies. But there is nothing as specific as this in chapter 11. But I think the name Greece here shows that it's the next kingdom. Remember, we're in Daniel. We got these four kingdoms, the image of chapter 2. We've been interpreting different parts of that in 6, 7, 8, 9. So Greece is what's coming up. And he's apparently going to help the prince of Persia to try to thwart God's will in history. However, I will tell you what is inscribed in the writing of truth. But this, some say this is God's decree of what's going to happen in history. Others have said it's the accurate record that God keeps, Psalms 139:16. I'm not sure. Now notice, I'm using New American Standard. I want you to follow me. Notice in your Bible, see if it's there. In verse 21, after the word, the writing of truth, there is a parenthesis mark. And that parenthesis continues all the way through verse 1 of chapter 11. So really, verse 1 of chapter 11 should go with chapter 10. And let's look at it. Yet there is no one who stands firmly with me against these forces except Michael, your prince. That's the angel who is dressed in white linen from verse 5 and 6. He is withstanding these powers. Michael, the people of God's angel, is helping him. Now look on. And in the first year of Darius the Mede. Now who's Darius the Mede? Well, if you look back at chapter 5, verse 31, he is the guy that took the kingdom from Belshazzar that night that Neo-Babylon fell. Now, there's been a big fight. Does that refer to Gobryas of Gudium, the governor, the general of Cyrus's army, who Cyrus made governor of Babylon? Is that another name for Cyrus? Because we found the word Darius can mean royal one. We're not sure. It's been a big hair pull. But notice it says, I arose to be an encouragement and a protection for him. Now, who does the I refer to and who does the him refer to? Well, it can't refer to Daniel, I don't think. It must refer to these two angels helping each other. And so whoever this other messenger angel is, he is inseparably linked with the ministry of Michael and vice versa. So they're helping each other. Now, what exactly that implies, I don't know. But that sets the stage for the very detailed chapter in 11. Now, I want to say to you, you know, I've thought about this, and I can't understand all the ramifications. So let me give you some questions and then say what I can understand. How does intercessory prayer affect not only God's will for our lives, but world history? Number two, how do angels bring God's will or answers or promises to our lives? How are angels the intermediary of answered prayer? Is it possible for the demonic fallen angels to thwart God's will in the life of believers and apparently his people as a whole for a period of time? Now, all of those seem to be yes. And if that's true, how does that relate to our prayer life? When we pray not only for what we need, but when we become intercessors for problems of the world. Friends, I want to tell you this. This chapter has pulled the curtain back and given us a rare glimpse behind history. There is more occurring than we can ever imagine. There is more on a invisible, angelic, spiritual level that's occurring in the history of the earth than we ever dreamed possible. And you know what that says to me? Bob, be persistent in prayer, friend. Something may be holding that up. That's just not God's will that's the problem. There are the active demonic forces trying to stop what you're praying for. And if we're praying in the will of God, as Daniel obviously was, there still may be a problem. So it says, hang in there in prayer and recognize there's more happening than the simplistic answers we usually give, either on the level of history or on the level of theology. Wow. I wish I knew more about this. Our curiosity just gets all over us. I think we're going to be so surprised when we get to heaven and we see the way things really are. We're going to say, wow, I didn't understand that. For us, it's very important that we stay faithful to God and we stay active in His service, both with our prayer and with our lives. And friends, I think more is involved than we'll ever dream of. We have more power in the name of Christ than we ever could imagine. We need to use it in intercessory prayer for others, because there really is a struggle, not only of sin nature in us, but there is a struggle in the angelic realm. There has been a fight. There is a fight. There continues to be a fight. Hang in there, Christian. We may not understand it all, but something's happened. Look at the prologue to Job. Isn't that the whole setting of the problems that Job faced, was something that was occurring on the angelic level between God and this angel? Well, think about it. This little book that I mentioned before called Old Testament Theology by A.B. Davidson would be a real good book to follow up on some of this theology, especially about Satan and the fallen angels and that kind of thing. I've really enjoyed being with you.